No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
I love my morning coffee, but sometimes the crash hits harder than the caffeine. That's when I switch to Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee infused with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics, giving me smooth, focused energy that actually lasts. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Enter for a chance to win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
How's it going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 131 of the Shula Bowl podcast. I am Jake Gibson, and it's all smiles here in South Florida. For one, the weather getting a little cool. And number two, both the FIU Panthers and the Florida Atlantic Owls are coming off of big blowout wins over their respective opponents. For the Panthers, they put up 50 points against Middle Tennessee. And for the Owls, they put up 40 against the Tulsa Golden Hurricane. So both teams now, however, have pretty similar paths to try to get into a bowl game. They both need two wins. And for the Panthers, well, they're taking on the Liberty Flames at Pitbull Stadium. For the Owls, they're heading to New Orleans to take on Tulane. So a couple of tough matchups in store for both teams here in South Florida. Let's start with Kevin Burrell, see what he thinks about the FIU Panthers as they get ready for their homecoming matchup against the Flames. And welcome, everybody, to this episode of the Shula Bowl Pod. And now I am here with Kevin Burrell as we talk a bit of FIU football. And Kevin, I got to say, cold weather has arrived here in South Florida. How are you bearing it? We're in unusual territory now, but it's a welcome change from the usual weather here.
Yeah, I don't mind it. Willie opened up his press conference saying, "Welcome to chilly South Florida," which was pretty cool, pretty funny. We're going to get good weather for the game, it looks like, on homecoming, knock on wood. But yeah, I'm excited. It was a good weekend in Murfreesboro, and FIU looking to keep it going here against many consider a Liberty team that you really don't know what you're going to get with them. That's just how it is nowadays. So yeah, should be a tough matchup, but it'll be a good one, and it'll be a good test for this FIU team that has only three games to go.
Yeah, they only have three games to go, but every one of them is massive as well. They're still in the race to get into a bowl game with a 4-5 record coming off, I would say, a marquee win this season with what they were able to do. So let's just get right into it. Well, before we even get into that, we should probably just address the big thing, which is the status of Kiwan Jenkins. Obviously missed the game against Middle Tennessee. Joe Bozanski came in and still lit it up, but the message from Willie Simmons leading up to this game against Liberty is it feels like Jenkins is not there yet, and that with Pozanski getting first team reps, how confident do you feel that it'll be the Joe Pozanski show once again against Liberty?
Yeah, I think it will be Joe Pozanski. Everything kind of indicated that today at the press conference. You were there. I'll look for the quote real quick. It's somewhere in here. He said, "We'll play it right up until game time, but both guys are preparing as if they're going to play." Willie told the media that Joe Pozanski took most of the first team reps in practice, with Kiwan still nursing the ribs injury that he re-aggravated. So I guess he re-aggravated this I don't even know when. It felt maybe not Mo State for sure. So he must. This must have been like a practice thing. Like I don't know. Willie noted the reaggravation of the injury in the coach's show on Monday. So that's kind of why he found out like what the injury was. And Pazansky stepped in and he looked good. Look, right? I mean, he completed almost all of his passes. He threw for four touchdowns, ran in for one. He's the first player in FIU history to account for five touchdowns in a single game. He obviously also tied the program record for most passing touchdowns in a single game at four. This offense rallied around Joe. They called him Joe Shiesty after the game. He was loving it. He was looking good. He was ready to go. And this team was really excited to have him around. So, and it's also tough, like, right? Like, you have to also think of it, like, the optics of this. Like, you can't just tell Joe, all right, you literally carried our back, won this game, but we're going to bench you. We're going to go with the guy who has had an on and off season. But I think it'll be Joe. I think Joe Pazansky will take the first team. He took most of the first team reps in practice, and I think he'll be the guy to go for this FIU team on Saturday, making a second ever strike at the FBS level.
Some excitement there with Joe Pazansky. Talk a bit about, obviously, his stats kind of speak for themselves, right, and what he was able to do with Middle Tennessee. Talk about the offense in general. How much it differentiates when he's in the game versus when Kiwan Jenkins is at the QB spot for FIU. How much it differentiates between what he's able to do, what he's allowed to do play calling wise, and how much it worked for him in this game against Middle Tennessee.
Yeah, it was clearly a lot more passing heavy, and that doesn't mean that the run game didn't establish itself. It looked fine. It looked pretty good. Keyshawn Owens really got it going towards the end of the game, but the difference is clear. They're going to be a more pass-heavy team when Joe's at the helm. And Willie kind of noted that after the Missouri State game, where Joe, he believes Joe will give them more in the passing game. And this was a pretty bad secondary for Middle Tennessee. So I am curious as to how much better. Well, Liberty speaks for itself. They're the top defense in conference USA. They have the second best pass defense in the conference. So it'll be a tougher task. It'll be a lot tougher for this FIU team, but Liberty's found their ways to struggle this season. So I'm curious to see what that looks like. And yeah, you're just going to get more out of the passing game with Joe. Joe's a passer. He's an experienced college quarterback. He's done this for a while now. He's going to quietly give – he's not the fastest guy, but we did see a couple moments there where if he had to use his legs, he will. But again, Kiwan's a little bit more of a dual threat type of guy. He'll give you extensive plays with his feet. And if that isn't going well for him, then, you know, it's really tough to find a reasoning as to why Kiwan should start, right? So if he's not 100% and he can't extend plays with his feet, he can't run the ball like he wants, he can't pass the ball, then he clearly got to go with the right guy, and that's Joe Pazansky. And I think that's what's going to happen this Saturday on homecoming.
And let's talk a bit about the weapons that Joe Pazansky will be working with and worked with him for this Middle Tennessee game. You have your usual suspects in Keyshawn Owens and Anthony Carey, but let's talk a bit about some of the underappreciated guys, honestly, at this point in the FIU offense, guys like JoJo Stone, Kyle McNeil, even throwing Dallas Payne, who I know spoke to the media earlier today at the time of recording. Talk a bit about some of the weapons that Pazansky had to work with and how he was able to get pretty much everybody he wanted to involved and made big play after big play passing-wise.
Yeah, you talk about underrated, and I think it starts with Carey. I asked Willie about it. It's just like, you know, we talk about Keyshawn Owens, what he's done this season, how elusive he's been, how good he's been. And then you have the case of Carey, who, you know, he has his numbers. He's put up some really nice numbers this season, but no one's going to talk about him because you obviously have the other guy and Owens. But Willie noted it. Like, they play off each other very well. Carey's a really selfless guy. And this is probably one of the best 1-2 tandems in the country, right? And, you know, aside from Penn State's Nick Singleton and Catron Allen, like, that's a good tandem. Like, he's currently at 366 yards, four touchdowns, averaging 5.2 yards per carry or per attempt on 70 rushing attempts. So he's been good. He's been really good. He's been fun to watch. And he's probably going to finish around 500, maybe over 500 yards on the season, while Owens will probably surpass the 1,000-yard marker against Liberty on Saturday. So he's been good. Then you have Alex Perry, who's kind of gotten it going a little bit after what's been a really on and off season for him. And he currently finds himself with 34 receptions for 579 yards and five touchdowns, which actually leads Conference USA. I'm just finding that out. And so he's certainly been a big playmaker for this FIU team, 6'5", 220 pounds. JoJo Stone quietly is kind of come along too. He's turned into a little bit of a gadget player, but at the same time, like, you can put him in the slot. You could have him run some trick plays, which we've seen Western, the failed throw from him. Then we saw the punt, the fake punt. So he's been a lot of those. He also showed that he's got the hops with the huge hurdle.
He does.
Against MTSU. So he has two back-to-back games with the touchdown. Should have had three, got called back. But yeah, he's been a big piece for this FIU team as well. And the last one is Dallas Payne, who had a really nice game against Middle Tennessee with a touchdown reception, back-to-back games as well with a touchdown reception. So Joe was lighting it up, two TDs for Perry in that game. So first career multi-touchdown game of his career for Perry. Two for Owens on the ground, which was his third multi-touchdown game of the season. And Carey had a touchdown. Joe had a touchdown. Payne had a touchdown. So a lot of touchdowns for this FIU team. But, yeah, certainly a big help for Joe. And Joe has a good target, and he's going to have some good opportunities on Saturday. And that a big piece of that, too, is the defense that really set him up in really advantageous positions, which is what he noted postgame. Like, you had the fumble – the forced fumble by Carter, forced fumble by Percy Courtney. Then you had the fumble. Both of those recovered. You had another fumble, which was unfortunately not recovered, but it was a good, you know, another nice forced fumble there to get things going a little bit. And this defense really, really shut down Middle Tennessee. They did a good job of that despite allowing 30 points. It should have been 24. Kind of a BS call there at the end to go for a touchdown. But regardless, FIU's got some good targets on offense, and again, defense is going to play a big role in this game against Liberty to make sure that they could put this FIU offense in an advantageous position. Don't have to deal too much with that defense in Liberty that ranks probably one of the better in the mid-major.
That's a good point there. So, all right, let's take off our realistic glasses for a second here. Actually, I should say let's put them on, because who did we beat? Well, it's the Middle Tennessee Blue Raiders, who have had, well, a season that requires firings of multiple coaches, most recently their wide receivers coach. That's the state of Middle Tennessee right now. So, you know, how much of this do you attribute to the Panthers lighting it up on all sides of the football, and how much of it do you really have to keep in mind that, oh yeah, they did this against Middle Tennessee. Liberty is going to be a step up from them, I would assume, in almost every step of the way.
Sure, you could say that, and I agree. Like, you do have to kind of take with a grain of salt. But you also think about it, how much would have Kiwan done against this MTSU team compared to Joe? Like, Kiwan probably wouldn't have thrown for four touchdowns. It wouldn't have ran in. Maybe he would have ran in for one, but he definitely wouldn't have thrown four touchdowns. And, yes, you're right. Middle Tennessee sucks. Like, there's no other way to say it. So, yes, you take with a grain of salt, but you also have to, the optics of it, you have to look at it, too. Like, you just threw for five touchdowns or four touchdowns. You had the rushing touchdown. You had a program history type of game. You looked good in all facets of the game. You needed that type of game to keep you going on the season and really get you going for the last stretch of this year where FIU needs to win two out of three.
And if FIU were to win two out of their next three, how important is it that they get it done against Liberty as opposed to what's next? Right after being the Jacksonville State Gamecocks.
Yeah, you said it. Gamecocks currently 5-0, could be different once this weekend ends, obviously, with the matchup of one of the better matchups in the group of five, even in college football, between Kennesaw and Jack State, two teams 5-0 in conference play this season. That'll be at Jacksonville State. So I'm curious to see what happens there. And yeah, you said it. This is not easy. It's not going to be an easy final stretch. You go to Sam Houston at the end. Always road games. You can never count out a win for the home team when you're on the road, regardless of how terrible Sam Houston is. But yeah, you really need to win this one. This one needs to be a win. I think if you lose this one, I think it's over. Right? You lose to Jack State most likely, and you'll probably end up with a 5-7 record, me assuming they beat Sam Houston. But you want to play for something. And I honestly, I really do hope they win the final two at home. First, because they could clinch at home. It would be better for us. And number two, because it's senior day, you want to win at home for senior day. FIU's done kind of well on senior days recently. So, yeah, and it's been streak busters this year. And the SID over there, Darren Yergin, mentioned it. Like, 6 years since they beat FAU, 6 years since they beat Western, 6 years since they beat Middle Tennessee on the road, 6 years since they've made a bowl game. The number six is kind of notable, not for the reasons you guys think, but for FIU. So excited to see if they could do it, and they should have a really good opportunity against Liberty. It's a good team, but Percy Courtney was saying it, like, they want to make a bowl game. And Dallas Payne said this too. Like, they want to be the group. Well, for Payne specifically, he wants to be part of the group of seniors that could go back and say, we were the reason why FIU football is what it is today. And then for Percy, who's been here honestly the longest, and he kind of noted that. I didn't even realize he had been here the longest, but he made – it's either him or Keegan. But, yes, he's been here for quite a bit. He was here for the lows of this program and for the highs. And, yeah, he said, like, he remembers the sour taste. He left Lynchburg with a sour taste in his mouth. So he's ready to go out there and hopefully beat Liberty on homecoming.
So let's really get into the meat and potatoes here of the Flames. They had a horrific start to this season, right? Going 1-5, where we thought, okay, this is just not their year. And then all of a sudden they turn things around, win 3 of their next 4, but they had a shocking loss, I would say. A shocking loss, I would say, to the Missouri State Bears this past weekend, which kind of has kind of made my radar of the team do a 180, because really, realistically, where is this Liberty team in your opinion? Are they? Do you think they're still in the hunt for a CUSA championship appearance, or do you think it's a bit too late for them for that? And that's kind of just where you know you are what your record says you are.
Yeah, I think it's that second one. You are what your record says you are. But I do think what Willie said makes sense, and it is true. The record does not indicate the team that Liberty is. I mean, you're the best defense in the conference for a reason. And on top of that, you know, like, sorry. But then at the same time, their offense has just been so inconsistent this season, especially with their quarterback, Ethan Fosco. He hasn't played the full season, so they've had that issue. But their running back is really good. Evan Dickens, he is very good. He is a top 3 running back in Conference USA per the numbers. I think currently tied with Keyshawn Owens for 9 rushing touchdowns. He's number 3 in the conference at rushing yards. So that'll be a tough task. And then after that, you got to play Cam Cook. So it does not get much easier for this FIU team. But regardless, this is a Liberty team that you really don't know what you're going to get. Similar to FIU. You could either get the FIU team that whooped Western Kentucky or the one that got killed by Kenneth on Vice Night. So that's kind of how I see it. Same thing with Liberty. Are you going to get the team that whooped Delaware or the one that lost to Missouri State and almost beat New Mexico State? So that's kind of how I see it with Liberty. It's a very interesting team, very interesting situation over there in Lynchburg. So, yeah.
Okay, then. Let's talk about Vosco and what he brings to the table. I asked this to a certain neutral host asked this.
Stop
to
it. You could say it was you.
Vosco, is he the biggest dual threat guy the Panthers will be taking on since Nick Minicucci of Delaware? And if that's so, do you favor FIU's defense against him and how they were able to sort of, I would say, limit Minicucci on the run? Do you think they can do the same against Vosco?
Well, I think you're wrong. I don't think he's the biggest dual threat player they face. They've played some very good quarterbacks this season, which one of those included Drew Allard, who's probably going to be the number 1 overall pick in the draft. Or, well, we'll see it now. But
that was before Delaware. I meant like since Delaware, since the Delaware game.
No. It's Minicucci. And that's not even close. I mean, Ethan Vosco, has only ran for 219 yards. So that's not really dual threat like to me. And he's been used a lot in 1 yard situations, some tush pushes. But no, he's a dual threat, but he's not really. Like he's an interesting. He's not that good in my opinion. He's really struggled with this Liberty team. I think expectations were a little bit higher for him than I had. Pretty high expectations for what he could do at Liberty. And he's just struggled. I mean, 6 interceptions, 8 passing touchdowns, 1,602 yards. It's just been a struggle for him this season. So they really had to rely on the run, which makes sense. I'm not too worried about him. I think Nick Minicucci, yes, he's probably the best dual threat quarterback in Conference USA. But overall, best quarterback we've played all season, or they've played all season, it's Allard, and it's not even close. So shout out to, Vosco is a good quarterback. He's a solid QB. He's whatever. I don't think he's the biggest threat that FIU will be seeing on Saturday. I think it'll be Dickens.
So, okay then. So, Dickens is the guy. All right. So on the other side, what Liberty is able to do defensively this season has been up and down, I would say. I feel like they give up a lot of points, even in their wins. I mean, give up 30 to Delaware, 27 to New Mexico State. What's the biggest part of their defense that you think that FIU can sort of attack on offense, regardless of who's in at quarterback?
Yeah, it'll be the ground game. I think they rank currently eighth in Conference USA in rush defense. It's going to be tough to attack them on the air. They're probably going to have to do that, but it'll be tough. And Dallas Payne was kind of noting it. Like, they still have some really good players, even though with Carter Joseph, their linebacker, out for their season, or edge rusher out for the season, who still leads the team in total tackles, by the way. I think that'll be something to keep in mind, who they have. So, yeah, it'll be the ground game for sure. That's where FIU is going to have to attack quite a bit, and they have the right guys to do it.
Liberty is eighth, by the way, in rush defense. Gives up about 161 yards per game. The only teams that give up more, UTEP, Delaware, which is interesting. Western Kentucky, also interesting. And Sam Houston.
Not interesting. We knew that.
So then what is the biggest aspect of, I would say, Liberty overall that you think, A, has the advantage over FIU right now, and B, does not have the advantage over FIU? What's the one part about them that you think Panthers will sort of keen in on more than anything else, if it's not the rush defense?
The pass defense. They are number two in the conference in pass defense. It'll be a tough task for FIU and their receivers. There's no other way to put it. And then, as I noted, FIU, I think, has the better rush offense, rush defense too. And that'll be something that FIU needs to take advantage of this weekend. So those are advantages and disadvantages.
We already know this, but how badly do you want to see the Panthers take down Liberty, considering the past, I want to say, three losses to them? And especially because of what we found out from Percy, who, like you said, one of the more veteran players on this defense, he just wants to take them down just because they are the Liberty Flames.
Yeah, I'll never forget overtime. Kiwon gets strip sacked, and that ends the game. Like, you felt like that comeback should have happened, should have been finalized, and that would have been such a huge win in that season for that FIU team, and for that to go south the way it did. And you know, that was the first sack they had given up, the only sack they gave up all game too. They played one hell of a game against Liberty last year in Lynchburg. So yeah, that was a tough loss, and then clearly they got embarrassed in 2023 in homecoming. 36-6, I think, was the final score of that game. And that was bad. That was really bad. So FIU clearly has revenge on their mind. And look, the Streak Busters, that's what we got to call them, the Streak Busters. Got to make a little graphic with Ghostbusters, but put the faces of the players on it. Streak Busters FIU, they have the chance to do that. They've played Liberty four times. They've lost all four games against the Flames. Yeah. I think that they could do that. And FIU hasn't won a homecoming game since 2019. So it's been 5 years since that. So they've had opportunities with Monmouth. But another tough homecoming matchup, a little later than the usual, which I don't hate, the late homecoming. Mm-hmm. And it's Sunblazer night. So we're going to see the new debut of the Sunblazer logo, which I know we'll be talking about it quite a bit on the Pause Up podcast, on the Pause Up preview show. And yeah, I'm excited for this one. It's going to be a good one against the Flames. But you're not going to like the prediction.
Oh, I'm not going to like the prediction, huh? Well, then what the hell? Let's just turn it up right now then. As who's winning this game and what's the biggest X factor as to why?
Yeah, I think Liberty's going to win it. I think it'll be a close game. I think Liberty wins it 24-17. I think it'll just come down to Liberty as they're going to lock up FIU a little bit better than maybe we think on defense. Their defense is just too good. Not saying I think FIU is going to lose or going to get blown out, but they'll keep up, just not enough. And maybe teams figured out Joe Pazanski just within one game. And again, you noted it was against Middle Tennessee. You don't know. Still don't even know if he's actually officially starting the game. We would assume it's Joe, but if it is Kiwon, how limited is he? Is he really 100%? So just a lot of questions still to be answered and still to be figured out. Now, that's why you could come out guns blazing, and this prediction looks terrible. So 24-17, Liberty comes out on top, and FIU needs to win out to make a bowl game.
Easier said than done, I would hope. But, hey, they'll have a chance to break another streak next week. And, you know, you lose to Jack State last season, and then I believe 2020, the COVID year, you also lose to Jack State while they were still – FCS, but I guess we can delve into that a bit more next week on the Shula Bowl pod. So, alrighty, Kevin, Thank you so much for your time. Now let's see what the other Kevin over at Boca Raton, who, by the way, it's not often we get to have two positive Kevins in one episode of the Shula Bowl pod with both teams winning their previous game, but both teams similar situations. It's going to get really tough to get to bowl games with these next two opponents for FIU, Liberty, Jack State, for Florida Atlantic, Tulane, and UConn. We can even speak on the Huskies and what they're going to have to deal with there, the Owls. But let's get into Mr. Fielder and see what he thinks.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Shula Bowl podcast. I am here with Kevin Fielder as well. Mr. Fielder, it's a good day in Boca Raton. The Owls did what they had to do, take down the Tulsa Golden Hurricane, and now here comes a tough two-game stand, if you will, both at home and on the road against two of the top teams in all of Group of Five, Group of Six. So very interested to get started with this, but let's just thought, wow, it's a little cold outside, Mr. Fielder. The winter is coming,
I went outside for a little bit one day. I actually need a hoodie. This is actually – I can't no longer wear shorts. I mean, you can, but – it's still a little too cold for that for me. It's like hoodie and short weather right now.
Can the Boca Raton faithful even handle this drop in temperature?
I can. I don't know if anyone else can. I personally cannot. And I lived in Kansas for a year, and I still can't deal with this. And this is like a normal day in Kansas for half the year. So I don't know if anyone else can, but right now I'm kind of struggling. It's a little too cold for me.
Well, you know what state's close to Kansas? It's Oklahoma, and that's where you'll find the location of the team that the Florida Atlantic Owls just took on. Now, that was that a segment or what?
That was a great segment. That was 10 out of 10.
Yeah, as they down Tulsa 40-21. Now, we were talking about it. Florida Atlantic, in all cylinders, the better team than Tulsa, but watch out for them Golden Hurricane. You mentioned it. And ultimately, Florida Atlantic got a I would consider a no-nonsense win against Tulsa, and a win that they really had to get to keep their bowl hopes alive.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about what a game can look like for FAU when they get everything going on both sides of the football, not just on offense, but on defense, on special teams as well, that was the most complete performance that FAU has played this year. In the sense that you finally got turnovers from the defense. You got, I believe, two interceptions. You got a fumble. You got stuff to happen on defense. You created turnovers. You created pressure. You put Tulsa in tough situations for 95% of that game. And on the offensive side of the ball, Caden Veldkamp, Easton Messer, Jayshon Platt, those guys were on fire. Caden Shields-Dutton, the running back, had a solid performance on the ground. I wouldn't say it was perfect, but for 95% of that game, it looked like FAU was cruising to victory. And Tulsa made it a little bit more interesting in the second half, and they had gotten it down to a two-score game, and you were kind of thinking, oh, no, what happens if, you know, FAU doesn't score here, and then, Tulsa comes back down. But every time that happened, FAU had an answer. And it's been the biggest issue for FAU this year is that they haven't been able to take advantage when they have needed to take advantage. And on Saturday, they took advantage every time they needed they needed a drive. When they needed a drive to win the game, they found ways to win the game.
There you go. And we can finally pop open the champagne glasses, Kevin, because Florida Atlantic not only got their first interception of the season, they got two. Talk about what was exceptionally clicking for the Owls defensively against the Golden Hurricane, even though AJ Allen did a rare phenomenon stat where he was the leading rusher and receiver for Tulsa in one game. Fun fact, AJ Allen had committed to FIU, but then like a week or so after flipped his commitment, or not even flipped, just re-entered the portal, ended up in Tulsa, and well, he was Mr. Everything against the Owls.
Yeah, the way I see it is anytime you start a game with their first three drives are an interception, which leads to a field goal for you, mm-hmm. a turnover on downs, which leads to a touchdown, and then another turnover on downs, that means you won the game. When you think about what it takes to win a game in college football and in the American Athletic Conference especially, it's you have to be the advantageous team. And when you start the game, the first three drives, which with what I consider to be three turnovers, turnover on downs, they might as well have been turnovers. You get the fumble to start the game. And then in the middle eight, the final 4 minutes of the second quarter and the first 4 minutes of the second half, FAU had a fumble return for a touchdown, immediately followed by an interception, which immediately turned into a touchdown right before halftime. A 14-point swing in the matter of about a minute and a half to end the first half. You enter halftime, instead of winning, you know, 17-6 or 17-9 or whatever the case may be, you're entering halftime up 31-6. Man, it doesn't matter how well you play in the second half. You're not likely going to blow a 25-point lead. If you just play decent in the second half, you should be able to win when you lead by 25 points. And FAU entered halftime winning by 25 points. They didn't really look back after that. And that's the most encouraging thing about all of this, is not the fact that the defense dominated the entire game from the yards perspective, from the time possession perspective. In fact, Tulsa kind of dominated those things.
Yeah.
It was the fact that FAU were advantageous. They took advantage of mistakes by Tulsa, because the truth is, no team is going to play mistake-free football. But if you can't take advantage of those mistakes, it doesn't matter how many mistakes they make. And they took advantage of almost every single mistake that Tulsa had. And that's how you win football games. It's that, and then it was later on the game when Tulsa was driving, they held them to field goals instead of touchdowns. Kept them down two scores. It forced them to have to keep playing off the back foot. It was a beautiful game by defensive coordinator Brett Dewhurst, by the entire defensive personnel grouping as well, because I went back, I watched a little bit more of that second half and some of the end of the first half. I don't think a player played poorly on defense that game. And when you have a game where 11 players play like that, 14, 15 players, you're encouraged about how the rest of the season can go. And I know we'll talk about it, right? You don't get any easier games. You get three of the tougher games on the schedule, but you know what, man, you're riding momentum that you haven't had all year, and that should be encouraging in and of itself.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? Caden Veltkamp got his swagger back, if you will. He no interceptions, three touchdowns. He was dominant on offense. 21 for 29 is really good in college football, to only give up that few incompletions. Talk a bit about what was really clicking for him and the connection he had with Easton Messer. It looked like Brady Moss out there against Tulsa, what he was doing with Messer that game.
Yeah, for the really 95% of the game that Caden Veltkamp actually played, because at the end of the game, he kind of messed up his shoulder, couldn't play the rest of the game. Zach Gibson came in through another touchdown just to make matters worse for Tulsa. But Caden Veltkamp, when he was on the field, he looked like a surgeon out there. He was surgical in how he was cutting up the defense. He was taking the plays that were there. He wasn't constantly trying to throw the ball, push the ball into tight windows. Mm-hmm. It was whatever the defense was giving you, you're going to take. And when you look at what that game looked like for most of the game, they were giving things to Easton Messer. They were giving things to Jayshon Platt. Yeah. They took advantage of that. And that opened up, I think, some of the more vertical shots down the field. You had a 44-yard play to Easton Messer. You had a 47-yard play to Jayshon Platt. You even had a 30-yard pass to Asad Wasim. You found explosive plays, but you also were able to sustain drives. It wasn't constantly third and long, well, hope and a prayer to hope we can get it. They had second and mediums. They had second and shorts. They were able to stay on track. And I think partially that was the run game getting going with Caden Shields-Dutton, who ran the ball 10 times for 107 yards, but I think it was also Caden Veltkamp just taking what the defense gave them and understanding that even if you don't have a successful drive, you don't have to come back and get all of it on one play. It could take two plays. It could take three plays. And Veltkamp looked a lot more comfortable out there, a lot more confident. That was the kind of performance that you expect from your quarterback one in the American Athletic Conference. And they got it from Caden Veltkamp for the entirety of that game, because he was borderline perfect for most of that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Now, you mentioned the slight injury to Veltkamp there. Let's just crack it open now. That's not going to be a concern for what's to come, is it?
No, he'll be playing next Saturday. He kind of mentioned that he's been battling something for most of the year or for the last few weeks. He just takes painkillers and landed weirdly on it at the end of the game. And, you know, he was even shown on the sideline throwing the ball in case he needed to come back in. But at that point, they were up 12, 13 points with 3 minutes left. At that point, you're willing to let the backup quarterback go in there. And Zach Gibson, the former Georgia State quarterback, said, "Yeah, I mean, I can do it too," and threw a touchdown in the game. So, you know, he'll be fine. He'll play on Saturday and should be good for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was very interesting how direct they were, I got to say, with saying that, oh, yeah, painkillers, that's what's keeping Veltkamp together. But, you know, as it may be, it's – well, it's been working, and especially worked in this game against Veltkamp now. It's not all sunshine and rainbows, I would say, even though you do get a pretty good-looking win. I'm curious as to see what you say was the biggest problem they experienced against Tulsa. And Tulsa's no slouch. They were obviously coming into this game fighting for a chance to potentially go bowling. Obviously, that's been shredded away with the seventh loss. But what was the one thing about Tulsa's game that you thought, Florida Atlantic didn't do a really good job against them?
I think it was kind of just FAU's penalties. They had 6 penalties for 60 yards. It's hard to win a lot of games like that. They kind of got lucky that it didn't end up being a major issue. But then FAU couldn't get them off the field on fourth downs. They had no problems getting them off the field on third downs. They held Tulsa to 10 of 23 on third downs. But on fourth downs, Tulsa was 4 for 7. And that's kind of the biggest difference between maybe this game being a 35-40 point win and it only being a 19-point win. It felt like those were kind of the biggest issues. I think from a play perspective, I don't think they did anything super poorly on defense. I don't think they had a lot of concerns offensively. It really was just kind of some of those fourth down plays where they need to figure out execution maybe a little bit better, but then also find a way to clean up the penalties. Because if you allow Tulane next week or UConn 2 weeks from now to – you know, convert 4 of 7 fourth downs, right, and you have 6 penalties for 60 yards like you did this past weekend, you're not going to beat those teams. Those teams are more talented. Those teams are more complete. You need to have something closer to, you know, a cleaner performance from those two standpoints to beat those teams comparatively to, you know, a really Tulsa team that is kind of still trying to find its rhythm.
So all in all, a nice win for Florida Atlantic, and now we move on to one of those teams, the Tulane Green Wave, who is one of the teams in the American vying for the right to be picked up by a power conference team to become a power conference member. You, of course, you also have the USFs and the Memphises, who have been trying for a hot minute now to get in. Tulane's one of those teams. I feel like it'd be fun if they rejoined the SEC. You know, have an interstate rivalry with LSU. You can't tell me it wouldn't be lit there in New Orleans. But still, to get back on track here, they are one of the better group of 5, group of 6 teams. They went band for band against Memphis and won on the road. Now they're going to be coming back to New Orleans hosting Florida Atlantic. What's your brief synopsis on Tulane? They've been beaten before to a CFP contender in Ole Miss, as well as a shockingly tough loss against UTSA. So they can be beaten here, Kevin.
Yeah, they can be beaten, but it's incredibly difficult when you go to their house and have to do it. Yeah. This is a Tulane team that has figured itself out. This is a Tulane team that understands how they're going to play football. They're going to play it at an incredibly high level. And their head coach, John Sumrall, is not going to be at that job for much longer. You know, I think it is pretty much a foregone conclusion at this point that he'll be looking for a job in the SEC this winter, because he's one of the best coaches in college football. He's one of the best coaches in Group of Five football. And this Tulane team, outside of a kind of a weird slip up against UTSA, where truthfully, I think that might just be Jeff Traylor devil magic in the Alamo Dome. They haven't had a lot of slip ups this year. They went to Duke. They beat Duke. They beat Northwestern, two power conference teams. Truthfully, not very good power conference teams, but two power conference teams. They beat ECU. They beat Memphis last week. They know how to beat some of the better teams in this conference. And the biggest thing about them is it doesn't matter if it's pretty. It doesn't matter if it's ugly. They're going to find a way to win the game. And a lot of that starts from their quarterback, Jake Retzlaff, the BYU transfer, who joined the team incredibly late, has started the entire year, leads the team in rushing, leads the team in passing. He is a dynamic quarterback. He's someone you have to keep an account on when you're defending the run. Kind of similar to Keon Jenkins at FIU or Blake Horvath at Navy. You have to account for him in the run game, because Jake Retzlaff this year, if he's not proven anything, it's that, man, he's going to run the ball down your throat if you let him. And they built this entire offense around him being able to do that. He's got a couple good receivers and weapons, most notably Shaz Preston, who has some incredible catches this year and was a former power conference player who got power conference interest out of the portal but chose to join Tulane. And truthfully, that's a decision that he's looking smart for, because right now he's the leading receiver on a team that is well within the hunt and the race to make a college football playoff spot. This is not going to be an easy game for FAU. Yeah. This is going to be maybe the toughest game on their schedule, just being honest, because this is a Tulane team that's kind of pissed off again after that UTSA game. I don't see a way that a game like that happens again on their schedule.
And have you seen their uniforms?
They have some of the coolest uniforms in college football. With the city, they call it like a city edition jersey with the lettering. It's so cool. Those are awesome. Even their base, like, I'm a sucker for their teal and green with the definitely with the wave logo. I'm a sucker for it. I don't have any merch of it, but I certainly look to like buy merch every year. I'm like, ooh, maybe I'll pull the trigger on some Tulane merch, even though I'm not a Tulane fan, because it is one of the nicest logos in college football, and their jerseys, they knock it out the park every year.
Definitely. And as someone who went to New Orleans earlier this year to see all the street names on the sidewalks, which is what Tulane's representing in their helmets, it's genius. It's genius. But let's talk about what I think is going to be the best matchup in this game, Kevin. It's going to be Tulane's pass defense, which gives up the third most passing yards per game in the American, only behind Charlotte and surprisingly USF, which gives up the most, against a Florida Atlantic offense that averages the most passing yards in the conference out of anybody in the American. Talk about your expectations for this matchup and how crucial it will be for the Owls to win it.
It's weird because while Tulane allows a lot of passing yards, they don't allow a lot of explosive plays. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't really make sense to me from just like a normal perspective, because you typically think that when a team allows a ton of passing yards, they equally allow a ton of explosive plays, and that's their weakness. Yeah. But Tulane, by most of the advanced numbers that I look at, are like 65th to higher percentile in explosive play stop. Like, they don't allow a lot of explosive plays, but they're going to allow things kind of within the range where they're willing to allow it. They're not going to let you beat them deep, but they're willing to let you dink and dunk your way down the field. And they're going to trust that they can create a turnover, create a big play, create a pressure situation off of it. This is another game where Caden Veldkamp has to be willing to take what the defense gives them. It doesn't have to be the 50-yard pass every time. You have to be willing to live with a 20-yard, you know, a 5-yard pass, a 6-yard pass, a 7-yard pass, something where you keep the game on schedule, because that's been where a lot of teams have found a way to beat Tulane, is they don't go for the big plays immediately. They let the big plays come to them. You have to frustrate Tulane. Tulane's not going to just give you stuff down the field. And the biggest question mark is is if Cayden Veldkamp is willing to take those plays. If he's willing to take those plays and he's not trying to force the ball down the field to the seam routes, FAU can dominate the time of possession. They can get big plays eventually, but you just have to be willing to take some of those plays and then hope your defense does enough against this offense to hold them.
Definitely. And you kind of alluded to it where, they give up a lot of passing yards, right? But if you want to talk points per game, Tulane only gives up 26, which is middle of the pack, leaning towards the low end, despite giving up all those yards passing. So on the other side of the ball now, what's the biggest thing above all else that this Florida Atlantic team really needs to watch out for against the Tulane offense? Because, you have a quarterback that also leads the team in rushing. Damn. That sucks that you're going to have to go up against a guy, another quarterback that's not afraid to use his legs. It's worked out both good and bad for Florida Atlantic at these past games against Rice and, of course, the academies. But still, what's the biggest aspect of that offense that the Owls need to look for on defense?
It's exactly what you mentioned. You have to account for Jake Retzlaff in the run game, because this year he has a 4-touchdown, 111-yard performance on the ground against Duke. This past week, he ran for 43 yards and a touchdown against Memphis. He's ran for over 60 yards a couple times this year. Like, he is not just a player who's only going to go down the field and get a 60-yard touchdown, but he'll also get 11-yard plays. And he'll really frustrate you when he's doing that, because it feels like you don't have an answer for anything that he does. This is a game where the linebackers, the defensive line, the front seven, they have to be on their game, because Jake Retzlaff, while he is a good passer, is not an elite passer. It's his ability to run the ball combined with his passing performance that makes him incredibly frustrating. FAU has to account for that. Tyler Stolsky, their leading linebacker, their defensive line, everyone has to be aware of that. And you can't play a lot of man coverage against them, because if you play a lot of man coverage against them, you are turning your back to the most dangerous player on the football team. And when you do that, I'm just going to be honest, he's going to take advantage. And so FAU may very well likely just sit in zone a little bit more, you know, maybe try and give takeaway things like that. But you have to account for Jake Retzlaff on the ground, or he's going to have a 39-yard play down the field where you're wondering how he broke contain and how he was able to do that. It's very similar, and I'm not saying Jake Retzlaff is the same player as this guy. It's pretty similar to how, like, Josh Allen plays, where you don't take into account that Josh Allen is
probably not a good time to bring up insane. Josh Allen.
I mean, yeah, he sucks. No, but like when Josh Allen is on his game, which he was not this past Sunday, let's be clear, Josh Allen, we're going to have a conversation later. But when he's on his game and he's playing at the top of his game, he's able to make guys miss, and you feel like you've got him locked in and your pass rush has gotten home finally. Then he breaks a sack and he's rushing for 20 yards. And you're like, how do you do that? Mm-hmm. It's kind of similar with Jake Retzlaff. You have to finish tackles. You have to finish plays against him, because if you don't finish plays against him, he's going to take advantage and you're going to be shaking your head wondering how he's done this all game. The concerning thing is FAU has struggled against some of the more athletic quarterbacks on their schedule. I mentioned the FIU game with Jenkins, the USF game with Byron Brown. They struggled to take advantage in there. They're going to have to take advantage against Tulane, or Jake Retzlaff will be more than happy to run the ball on you.
Definitely. That's going to be a big concern for them. Alrighty then. Well, we've heard you out on both the good and bad of what could happen for Florida Atlantic in this game, but now I need a direct answer, Kevin. Who's winning this game and the biggest X factor as to why?
I'd love to say that FAU will win this game, and I'd love to say they're going to go into Tulane, into New Orleans, and win a game like that, but the truth is I don't think they will. And that's not because I don't think FAU is not playing their best football, or that FAU is, not ready for this game. I think this is, to my credit, one of the best teams in the American Athletic Conference. It's one of the best teams in Group of Five football. This is an incredibly tough team to beat. This is an incredibly tough team to play against for 60 minutes, and I don't know if FAU is truthfully ready for that. And it's possible that when they come out there, they find a way to win this game, but I think Tulane's going to win this game by 8 points. Give me 38-30 Tulane, and I think the biggest X factor as to why is Jake Retzlaff, who might be the most talented quarterback that FAU has to play this season. And he's playing some of his best football down the stretch. It's not going to be easy to beat him. It's not going to be able to contain him for 60 minutes. And they're going to have to find a way to do so. I will say, if FAU wins this game, I think it's because Caden Veldkamp took what the defense gave them, and that Veldkamp to Easton Messer connection continues to play at a high level.
Definitely. Good analysis there, Kevin. And I'd like to say that things will get a little easier for Florida Atlantic after this game, but then you take on a power conference team that can, or not a power conference team, but a team that can take down power conference opponents in their sleep, being the UConn Huskies.
Well, I guess it might get easier because it's not Tulane, and that by virtue might be easier. So
we'll have to find out the hard way in a week or so, especially after what happens this weekend against the Tulane Green Wave. So, all righty, Mr. Fielder, how much do you wish you were heading to New Orleans to check this game out?
Man, you know, I have not actually been to New Orleans yet, and it is on my list of places I have to go. And I almost went last year when K-State played Tulane. I chose not to because I went to some of their other road trips. And while I quite enjoyed Provo/Salt Lake City, Utah, I'm still a little frustrated I didn't go out to Tulane, because that would have been a great game and a great city to experience. And so I am a little mad I'm not out there right now, because that would be quite the place to go.
Okay, then. FIU and Tulane on November the 15th, 4 o'clock kick, I want to say, and I think it's on ESPN+. So, Kevin, Mr. Fielder, thank you so much. And thank you all so much for watching this latest episode of the Shula Bowl Podcast. Enjoy some football, everybody.